Let's remember together some of the greatest TV and movie stars of yesteryear with the woman who knew them. Mary Jane Popp hosted radio and TV shows for nearly 5 decades, meeting these stars and getting them to share their real-life stories. You'll meet them up close and personal as Mary Jane searches her extensive archives for the best and brightest real star talk on Pop Star Talk. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp!
Wait till you hear this episode of Pop Star Talk. Now, we go back quite a way to a star who fought as the leader of the Sharks on the big screen. Now, that's a big hint for you folks. Hi, Mary Jane Popp here with, of course, my producer, Kenneth Segura Knoll. And I have to tell you, I've always loved musicals, especially when they were huge productions that remain with you as you leave the theater humming the great songs. Hey, Ken, do you have any favorites? And I bet you kind of know which one I'm talking about, huh?
Well, you know, I have always loved musicals. I love music. But I recognized the songs, but I never recognized the musical they were part until I...
No kidding!
Until I moved to Sacramento, and we had the wonderful music circus. And I would go listen and watch and musicals at the music circus.
Nice.
And it was wonderful. You know, just, it's so exciting.
Well, when you have the people who made this what it was, and that was Leonard Bernstein for the composer, and Stephen Sondheim for the lyrics, you can't miss. I mean, these were greats, and they made so many wonderful musicals, and it was just something they had in their heart and soul. I honestly think so. When you talk about that kind of music and lyrics, it doesn't come from learning something. It comes from the heart. Don't you think so, Ken? You know, you're a musician.
Yeah. I mean, it's people live the music in musicals. It's not just performing it, it's living it, because it goes along with, you know, along with a storyline that, yeah, you know, there's acting involved with it. So it's acting and the music. So actors love musicals because they get to live the story.
Well, and West Side Story, I mean, it was basically Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, you know, the star-crossed lovers, correct?
Yes.
And the tragic ending, of course. That's the sad part. But that's the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we've got some wonderful thoughts from George Chakiris. He was Bernardo. Didn't start out as Bernardo. I'll talk to you about that a little bit later on. But Bernardo was the head of the Sharks. And he actually did a 1950s production of West Side Story in London. Before all this, like I said, 1950s, before 1961, when the movie came out. But then it changed roles. He was Riff in the London production of West Side Story. He was the head of the Jets. But then when they went to the movie, they thought he had, you know, a little bit more of a Puerto Rican look. And that's why he got to be Bernardo. But still, you know, major star there. So, you know, now that you have an idea, folks, with whom we're going to go back in time with, I want you to hear this song, and I won't even have to introduce the movie and one of its stars. Think Bernardo, head of the Sharks.
Part of television. He is sexy, and he is handsome, and he made his film debut in The Chorus of Love way back when. But we've seen him in countless successes, from West Side Story and numerous films to so many television series. But, you know, there's really not enough time to mention them all. But as the iconic Rita Moreno said, you will savor this story of a Greek boy in America who did well, very well indeed. And that's a quote. She was referring to his memoirs entitled My West Side Story. As George Chakiris opens up about his life in and out of the spotlight, movies and television to Broadway, you know, he's had a great, fantastic life and such a diversified life. And now George Chakiris shares his story with us on Pop Off. George, it's a pleasure to have you with us on Pop Off.
Well, gosh, no, Jane, thanks. It's great to be with you. I love your name.
Okay. It's for real. It's for real. It's a Romanian name. Now, don't laugh. I got to tell you something. You were born in Ohio, right? Norwood, Ohio?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right. Uh-huh.
I was close by, Chicago. Okay. And in Chicago, very strong Greek community. And we used
to, of course.
Yeah, and we used to go to the, you know, we were always invited to their weddings and that, because I did a lot of singing back then. And so they would invite me to come and sing at the weddings, and we had a wonderful, wonderful time. Of course, the ouzo helped. But they used to always call us Mary Jane, well, call me Mary Jane Papadopoulos, because they said I was an adopted Greek girl. Isn't that amazing? Those were the good old days, you know?
Absolutely. So you were a singer.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's how I started, singing and doing some acting. And then someone dared me to go and audition for a television show. I did, got the show, and landed up doing interviews for the rest of my life, over 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
How fantastic. And you sound like you're just going to be wonderful at it. And you must love doing it.
I do, you know, and I love talking to people because I learn so much. I said it at the beginning in this hour. I'm a nosy person. I like to find out about people and what they're doing and helping other people with information so they can make good decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Great.
Now, what a life you've had. Oh, I got to tell you, at White Christmas, I saw it at Christmas time, of course, this last year, and I immediately recognized you when I saw Rosemary Clooney when she sang the song in the club, and there was George Chakiris right next to her doing the dancing. You were fabulous.
Well, you know, the great thing about that number, because as I loved dancing, of course, of a lot of different movie musical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there were quite a few of us in a given number, like at 10, 12, 16, and so on. And but one of the beautiful things about doing that, being in that number with Rosie, there were just four of us.
Yeah.
So we were more visible, and that turned out to be a good thing.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, she was like right there with her hand on your shoulder, if I remember right.
Yeah. So. And she was great. Rosie was just, everybody loved, you know, you couldn't help but love her. She was so honest, so real, just a beautiful, lovely, lovely person. She was great.
I get the idea that a lot of stars back then, they were open to helping young people. Yeah, I mean, you were just a kid back then.
And Rosie was pretty young herself, you know. So,
but they were willing to share information and help others. Isn't that amazing? That's amazing.
Well, it is amazing, and you're right. Yeah, there was more generosity or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you actually grew up really fast and big time when you did West Side Story.
Right.
You played Bernardo, right?
In the movie, I played Bernardo, the leader of Spark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maria's brother.
Yeah. And you are a singer, too, talking about singing. You actually cut a record at one time, didn't you?
Oh, my God, yes. Mary Jane, hey, you're a singer, so we both know what we're talking about here and how we feel. I love singing so much. I still do, but I love singing. And I did, over the years, have recorded some albums. I had a contract with Capitol Records, and the recording was just such a beautiful thing. You know, the music, the orchestra, it all came together during a session. And just music is so beautiful, but recording and singing, I love singing, absolutely.
Isn't it amazing when you do a live audience and all of a sudden, if you're singing a sad song, you see a tear or two, or you know you're getting to that person because you can feel those people, that are watching you. There's nothing better than that.
You're right. There is nothing better than that. You know what comes there? There are two very famous singers that just come to mind as you say that. Because one of them is Judy Garland, of course, because of her incredible connection to her material. And then Lena Horne in a very different way, but again, very strong connection to her material. And the thing that I love about both of them is, as performers, they didn't need fire and dyes, and they didn't need fireworks around them or anything like that. They were able to just stand there by themselves and do something with strong and beautiful.
Yeah.
They didn't need everything going on around them. It was just them. And I love that.
Well, you know, what happened, 64 or 62? 64, I guess, when the Beatles came, you know, and all that went away. All the screaming and yelling. Remember when he was on, when the group was on Ed Sullivan? And I remember I was young, but I was watching television, and I was so angry because I couldn't even hear him from the screaming. That always bothered me. It's like, I want to hear them, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a legitimate concern.
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk a little bit more about you here. In the 70s and 80s, you did a lot of television series, didn't you?
Right. Gosh, yeah, I did a lot of television. So, I did a lot of episodic television here in the States. I also did a BBC television series with Rosemary Harris, an incredible actress. On the life of George Sand, the French novelist, and I played Frederick Chopin.
Ooh.
I also did a television series in Japan, of all places.
No kidding.
Again, on another real person, on Octavio Hearn, who became a Japanologist and lived in Japan. So, but NHK did a four-part series on that. So, I've done a lot of television, yes. I'm singing musical things as well, and so I've gotten the chance to sort of go do a bit of everything, if you like.
You know, it is, like I said, you've had an amazing life. And some of the television series were some of my favorite. Medical Center, Hawaii Five-O, Dallas, Murder, She Wrote. I mean, these are all iconic shows you were on.
Absolutely, you know, and they were wonderful shows. One of the things I remember about Dallas was when I was actually on the set working. That was such an organized, comfortable set. It was so well produced and so organized that everybody on that set, everybody was happy, and so the work was smooth and no problems ever arose. But again, it came back to be a show that was beautifully produced. Another show that one of my favorite shows, and it was just on a downward spiral. I ended up doing 11 episodes. It started off with just one, mm-hmm. and I ended up doing 11. But one of my favorite television shows, where I did just one, was Hawaii Five-O.
Mm.
But again, it was Jack Lord was so proud of that show, and everything again was beautifully done. It was a great script, and it was a kind of a really good story,
mm-hmm.
and so it was. You know, when my material is really good, it's of course much more fun to do. But yeah, I've gotten to do and Murder, She Wrote, of course, as you said. I'm not even remembering everything now, but I did do as we all did. Everybody was doing episodic television.
Yeah,
because it was important to do it not just. To be working, but for a lot of people, just for exposure, because it was the only way to actually be relevant and be seen. Because you need to remind people that you're still alive, so to speak. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Oh, sure.
And episodic television allowed a lot of us to do that.
Well, didn't you actually start out wanting to be a dancer, though?
Well, as a kid, I fell in love with movie musicals. So of course, I, as a kid, thinking in a very naive way, but I love dancing. But my primary love, even as a kid, was singing.
Mm.
But dancing was the first thing I came to study professionally. When I was 19, a girl I was in high school with found out about this wonderful school here in Los Angeles, the American School of Dance.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me that Sid Charisse and Leslie Caron take class there. Well, that was all I needed to hear.
Okay.
So I took the train from Long Beach here to Los Angeles one morning to watch a professional class at the American School of Dance. There was nobody famous in class, but it didn't matter to me. I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So I got a job working as an office boy in the advertising department at the May Company downtown. And I worked every day at the May Company. And every night after work, I took two classes. And that's how, that was my first thing to learn technically, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And also I love dancing. Singing and dancing, and I have a sister who was the same, came kind of naturally to us. We were sort of, didn't even, we still had to practice and learn and have a technique, but but movement was in a wonderful way. It was natural for me, and so that was an advantage, if you like. But when I was first taking class there, some of the kids I was in class with, who I hadn't known yet, were already working in the chorus and singing in the rain. So I was already around people who were already working on a movie, and especially that one. So little by little, you start to get the audition and start to work as a dancer yourself.
Now, I mentioned West Side Story earlier, and isn't it true that your hand and footprints are actually placed in cement for actually all of history in connection with the 50th anniversary of West Side Story, which premiered at Grauman's like 50 years prior?
I know. It's such a small world part in all of this. You know, the connections are lovely. But yes, Rita Moreno and Russ Tamblyn and I, on whatever date that was, yes, we did our hand and footprint at Ed Grauman's, and it was, hey, what can I say? It was great. Because I remember when I was at the American School of Dance and taking class, I got a scholarship at the school. And in order to have the scholarship, all I had to do was, at the end of the day, clean, take care of the studios, clean the floors and the mirrors and all of that stuff, and then lock up. And after I did that, at the school every night about 11 o'clock in the evening or so, I was finished and I would wend my way home, and I was renting a room at a rooming house on Hollywood Boulevard, and on my way home I would pass Grauman's Chinese Theater every night and just look at those footprints all by myself. It was great. You never know what's going to happen in life, and there are a lot of good things about that. But who would have thought, me looking at those footprints in 1952, whatever year it was.
Oh, my.
But later we were doing it ourselves. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary happenstance, isn't it?
Yeah, and that happened in 2012. That's amazing.
Okay, 2012.
Oh, great.
You know, it is amazing how time flies by, Ken. He is now 93 years old, and I'm actually looking into getting him back on just to find out what he's up to these days. But I understand from Harlan, who knows him very well, that he may well come back because, you know, there's so much more that I wanted to talk to him about. And, you know, at 93 years old, you think, well, do they have the capacity to talk anymore? Boy, I'll tell you. Some of these stars, they absolutely amaze me on how they can remember the beautiful parts of things that they did. And I don't know, it's amazing. Can you imagine what it's like for him to walk past Grauman's, which is still there? It's not the same that it was Grauman's Chinese at the time, but to see his hands and footprints and those of Rita Moreno, and I believe Natalie Wood is there too, because of course she was in the movie, to have that there for eternity, for people to walk by. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is. We were down in that area not too long ago, and I was up very early, and I walked down to the Starbucks there on Sunset. They've really cleaned that place up. I mean, it's beautiful. And during the day, there's in front of the theater, there's thousands of people.
Yeah.
And what an honor. I mean, to be on the sidewalk somewhere along, but to be right in front of Grauman's Theater,
yeah,
across from the Roosevelt Hotel, wonderful.
It's historic. And I think tourists are still, Hollywood and Vine, Sunset Boulevard, they're all going to be drawn to that. That's part of the history of Los Angeles and Hollywood, and that's never going to change. I hope it doesn't change, don't you?
I hope not. And, there's so many people, and he's a good example. You've seen him over and over in theatrical musicals and the films and television, and you don't know their name.
Uh-huh.
It's not an everyday name. And then you walk down the strip there, and you look name after name, and it's fun to do a little research. Well, who was this person? And then you go, I know that person.
Well, and the thing is, when you do a lot of, especially like television, I mean, he did tons of stuff. My favorite was when he was on with Angela Lansbury on Murder, She Wrote. That was one of my favorite programs. But, you know, sometimes you don't even recognize these people. They're different characters. They look different.
You know, that's interesting. I worked on Murder, She Wrote. I don't remember him.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Murder, She Wrote. Oh, a ton of them. Meet Me in Las Vegas, Under Fire. Those are films that he did. I mean, he did a ton of films, too. Mm-hmm. Smaller parts. It was nothing like, you know, Bernardo and West Side Story. But still, again, we don't always recognize a lot of these people, especially on the TV series. And he did Dallas. I didn't know he did Dallas. You know, a lot of stuff I learned from him, which was kind of fun. And he surprised me in many, many ways because he's very down to earth. You can tell just by hearing him and listening to him that he tells it like it is, and how he experienced it, and how he loved what he did. And they have, you'll start out as a dancer, but he was a singer and then actor. It all meshes together, you know. It kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, me when I first started. Did a lot of singing, did a lot of musicals, club work, and then fell into the acting thing, and then fell into doing television. And it's so funny because it was supposed to be that people like me would be interviewing me. Instead, it's reversed. I'm talking to all these people and interviewing them over 5 decades. And I'm honored. I am so honored to have that privilege to do that because they're special. And I don't want them to be forgotten. We go through a lot of changes. I understand that. And the generations have their new people that they're proud of and happy to be with. But, you know, I don't want them to forget about how it all began. They really climbed on the shoulders of some of these major stars that we're going to be talking to on Pop Star Talk, don't you think?
Yes. I hope we can get him back and a lot of these other people that we are trying to get back on.
Yeah.
And we will have a new part of our podcast where we're going to have a subscription part where you can go in and add and listen to this additional interviews or new interviews, and that's going to be great.
Yeah, because I got a ton of folks that I did not only a half an hour interview with, but I did an hour, you know, and I don't want them to miss the second half of it. It's important that they hear it because the stories that they had to tell, I don't know. I just felt so privileged to be able to talk to these people. So anyway, well, now that you know who it is and what he did, I had to ask George about working with so many greats over the years. But you know me, I'm nosy, curious, okay? I was curious if he had a favorite.
My favorite is Elaine Stritch.
Real? Oh, well.
Because I really spent a good amount of time with her. Elaine and I did the national company of the Stephen Sondheim musical called Company, produced by Hal Prince.
Uh-huh.
And after the great thing, really, and I really mean it, the great thing about doing that show, well, of course, was it, but the great thing was being able to spend that time with Elaine. She's, I love her more than I can ever say, but she's so wonderful. She's so vulnerable. She's just an extraordinary person. But
She was one of a kind.
She is one of a kind, absolutely. You know, on YouTube, just in the last couple of weeks, I looked her up, and she was. It was a concert one evening of singers, with female singers, doing Stephen Sondheim's material.
Huh.
There were Patti LuPone was there, Bernadette Peters, and of course Elaine. And Bernadette Peters was absolutely fantastic, and all. But Elaine, just the material goes further, deeper. I can't really say how she does it, but it's just it goes far past what anybody else ever tries to do.
Well, like I said, one of a kind. You know, these are all unique people that you've worked with. But I would say what really, you know, got people to pay attention to George Chakiris, of course, was West Side Story. Why do you think why was it? What was the magic of West Side Story?
First of all, I think the story. It's a classic story, you know, Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare. But that story is relevant because of what it's about. Two people who fall in love, and because they're from opposing sides, and because of the discrimination and all of that that goes on between these two sides, mm-hmm. that's happening in the world as we speak.
Yes.
So we all can identify with that without even trying to, because none of that has changed. It's still going on, and the beauty of West Side Story was the four men who originated West Side Story for the theater, Jerome Robbins. I mean, he's another extraordinary man. Yeah, again, one of a kind. Stephen Sondheim's music and lyrics, Arthur Lawrence's script, and of course, Leonard Bernstein's score. I mean, that score, if you just hear the score, it's so beautiful. So that was quite a collaboration between these four extraordinary men, and they created something that really has remained in people's thoughts and so on, because it's about something that is relevant in today's world as well.
Not only that, the music, it's the kind of music that when you leave the theater, you'll never forget them. There's a lot of movies out now, and that, you know, every time I see the Academy Awards and they talk about the best movie, best song, and I'm going, they're not memorable. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably maybe has always been true, but you're right. Yeah, it takes something special to be special, I guess.
Yep. Absolutely. Now you were singing, dancing, acting, and now you are designing jewelry. How did that start?
Well, I don't remember exactly how it started as a hobby. I fell in love with, I went to an art school here in Los Angeles where I was learning soldering and wax and ways to actually make jewelry. The class was great. I loved it. It was social as well. So we were like-minded people, all of us wanted working on the same thing, was great. And without trying to, I became very familiar with the jewelry district, in downtown Los Angeles. I was learning everything, and I loved it. Again, without trying to, I had made a number of pieces. One of the beautiful things about jewelry is, however you make it, once you've made it, you can actually hold it in your hand, and there's something so gratifying about that.
Mm-hmm.
I got familiar with the manufacturers downtown Los Angeles, so I started to. People wanted me to make more, and I was able to do it because of the manufacturer, but also. Through that manufacturer downtown, a Japanese distributor saw my thing and liked them and wanted to represent me in Japan as a distributor. And so that happened. I've been working with him, with Yoshito is his name. I've been working with him ever since. So it, again, started as a hobby, and it became more. But the bottom line is it's such a gratifying thing to do. Because, you know, again, you know, it's creative. It's fun. It's fun.
I love I looked at some of the ones that you've done. The Love and Hope, the Silver Heart. That is so unique.
Oh, thank you. You know one of the things that I like about that heart is because it has a little bit more dimension to it because of the way it's sculpted.
Yep.
I've always liked that particular piece because of that.
Yeah, the other one, the Lotus Charm pendant with the pink sapphires. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, do they just come to you, or the designs, or, you know, you sketch them out? Well, how do you do it?
The very first, you know, I had some books, magazines on different kinds of jewelry made over the centuries, and one of my sister had been to the Tut exhibition a long time ago. I was here in Los Angeles, and she had the book from that particular exhibition. And in that book, you see all the amazing things that were found in the King Tut crypt and the jewelry. And the scarab is a very important part of Japanese, I'm sorry, of Egyptian culture.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the first things I started with, just because of that influence, was a scarab. And the interesting, once you make one piece, let's say that was a pendant.
Mm-hmm.
Once I've made it into a pendant, it turns out there are other ways you can use that very same design. It can be a ring, it can be earrings, it can be a belt. And that's the beauty it's an ongoing process, and the creative thing never stops. And one design makes you, without trying to, come up with another design. So they're all related in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're beautiful. I mean, you have a beautiful collection. As a matter of fact, now, how can people see your collection?
Well, just on my website, georgechikiris.com.
Okay.
The only other sort of real, I do sell in Tokyo, but I don't want anyone to travel to Tokyo.
No. Not yet, anyway.
but an incredible, yes, exactly. And that's it. I don't, Mitsukoshi department store, an extraordinary department store. So with my Japanese distributor, we sell there and otherwise on my website.
Online. It is beautiful. And now what about your book, My West Side Story? Available every place, I assume?
Yeah. I think it just became available in the last week, if I'm right.
Okay.
On Amazon. I don't know about bookstores, but I don't know how to answer that part of it.
Oh, they can can still order through like independent bookstores, and they'll get it for them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not a problem.
But I do understand it's available on Amazon. Yeah. And,
well, you know, there's so much more I want to talk to you about. Can we schedule another time? Because you know, half hour is not very much.
Yes, of course. I'd love that. Sure.
Yeah, it's been so fun, but I got a million more questions to ask you. So.
Well, I talk too much. My answers are so long, I waste time.
No, it's not. Stop that. No, it isn't. I love hearing the story. That's the whole thing. I love the story behind the story. You know what I mean? The backstory.
Yeah.
To me, that's more interesting than anything. I want to find out more about George Chakiris and what his likes and dislikes, what he thinks about today. There's so much more. So I have to definitely invite you back if you would come.
I would love that. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jane.
You betcha. I'll get with Harlan and we'll schedule a new time, okay?
Okay. I would love that.
And thank you so much for taking the time to be with me. Like I said, I'm a fan. I'm even a bigger fan now.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes. You take care and stay well, okay?
Okay. You too.
What a nice guy, Ken, don't you think?
Yeah. You know, just an everyday guy.
Yeah. And I think we've found, at least I have over the years, and I know you have too, because you've talked to a lot of stars over the years too. Once you get past the PR people and the people that are trying to protect them all the time, they're just people like you and me. They have the same hopes and dreams and they have a family. They're not that much different from us, except for their talent. Their talent is absolutely amazing. And I love saying he went from the silver screen to silver jewelry, you know, and some of his pieces, they're still online. I Googled silver jewelry by George Chakiris. It's also on his website, by the way. So you can still see all his jewelry. He's still doing it. I imagine not as much as he was doing it the time that we did the interview, which was around 2016 or something like that. But it's still up there. My West Side Story, his book, is still up there. I Googled that, and by golly, it came up, you know. And I'm saying, well, that's great. I didn't read this book. I'm gonna have to get the book and read it now, because I'm sure there's some really interesting stories behind the scenes that we did not know of when we saw the movie on the big screen.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what's the book again?
My West Side Story.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to get the book. At the time that we did the interview, I was doing so many other things. I didn't get a chance to really read the book. So now I think I've got the time to just go back and see that. And especially if I'm going to have him come back again. And we're working on that right now. So to see if he'll be able to do it. I think he will. Some of these people, they can't anymore. And I fully understand that. You get to a point in your life where either you don't want to do it or you can't do it. And they're entitled. You know, a lot mm-hmm. of these people are in their 90s. They're entitled to retire when they want to. Right. But yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. I love the people that we talk to. And like I said, they're so honest and straightforward. I was surprised that his favorite personality was Elaine Stritch.
Yeah.
But I've talked to other stars that said not many people know about Elaine Stritch, but she was a huge, major talent. And I've heard that from other stars too, but there's always that kind of section of people right. who are major talents, but they didn't get the hoopla that a lot of the others did.
Again, hopefully we'll get him on and we'll include it into our exclusive content, and
good.
Our listeners can subscribe to the exclusive content and listen to more about his life and story. This is an important thing that we're doing because we want to not add any commercials to this side of the podcast.
Yeah.
So listeners, we're out there getting more interviews and very special exclusive content for you to listen to.
Yeah. And we've got some side stories. You know, we've got stars, obviously, but I'm not sure that some of the other people that I did interviews, which I've held on to, like Caspar Weinberger, Bugliosi, he's the prosecutor for Manson, and Nancy Reagan, Rosalind Carter. I know they say, well, they weren't on the big screen, but they were well known, you know.
Oh, yes.
And we might just add those on the other side. If you're a subscriber, you get to hear some of these people that I felt so privileged, Ken, so very privileged to be able to talk to these people. And like I said, I've never run into anyone that didn't open up and be honest. Maybe it was because they knew I was there to hear their story. I wasn't there to beat them up or make it sleazy or anything like that. I never went after that. I was honest. If something was in a story, I'd ask them about it, but I also gave them the opportunity to answer and to let us know who they are and what they are and what they've done instead of reporters, you know, or interpreting a story or changing the story or coming up a conspiracy story. I don't believe in that. I believe going to the source and finding out what the people are really about. And well, I'm going to continue doing that. I'm still doing it. Still doing these people. And I think it's important for that to be on. And that's going to be our legacy, Ken, to leave these stories for future generations too. Don't you think?
Yes, I agree. Did you hear that bell ring?
Yes.
That was another great thought I had.
Uh-oh. What was that? It went away again, though.
I just wanted to point out when I get great thoughts, some bell goes off.
I love it. Yeah, it rings true right through your mind and into your voice so that we can hear the story. I love it. I love it. I love it.
I think it's Jake hitting a triangle next to me. Ding.
Yeah, we don't have time to remind them who Jake is, but we'll come back and tell them about Jake too, which is your friend, sort of imaginary friend or real friend. I'm not sure, but you kept him as a friend for life. Anyway, Ken, as always, it's a pleasure, you know, to have you and Greg too. So again, folks, that took us back to some great musical times with George Chakiris. But I hope that you learned more about him. I know I did, especially that he's still doing great work with his art in designing jewelry. Now, you can check out more about this. I'm going to remind you that famous movie start for him was My West Side Story. And since he was in West Side Story, you got to get the book and find out all the backstory about it. And you can actually go to his website for the jewelry at georgechakiris.com. And let me spell it for you because it's a good Greek name. Chakiris. georgechakiris.com. And Ken, I know you know this too. A lot of stars had hobbies so that when they either retired or semi-retired, like Red Skeleton, artist, Buddy Ebsen, he also was an artist. And that kind of, I think, helped them with anxiety, helped them with a lot of stuff that was going on in their lives. But now that is their legacy, not only the movies and the television that they did, but the artistry too. So, okay, folks, thank you again so much for being with us. I'm Mary Jane Popp, along with Ken Knoll and our engineer, Greg, hoping that you'll be back with us for another episode of the Pop Star Talk. And don't forget to live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream.
The Jets are coming out on top tonight. We're gonna watch Bernardo drop tonight.
That Puerto Rican punkle go down, and when he's hollered uncle, we'll tear up the town.
We'll be in back of you, boy.
Right.
We'll you're gonna flatten him good.
Right.
From the turn,
spurn the word.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.